Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Kyle Klinsky Show on Blog Talk Radio. Got a great show lined up for you today. It is Friday, August 24th, 2012. The number to call up if you want to chat is 646-478-5115. Got plenty of stuff to discuss, some Romney gaffes. We're going to talk about Pat Robertson, John Boehner. But let's kick it off with the bad news. Unfortunately, there was another shooting today, Empire State Building, right around that area. And I found interesting that this shooting is, you know, being covered at length, and it's breaking news, scandal, and everybody's going crazy about it. But Think Progress did a fantastic article where they basically compiled and showed how this Empire State Building shooting is not the only shooting that has occurred in the past 24 hours. In fact, there were four others, including a drive-by was one of them. So, I mean, this has become just a completely regular thing in America, normal occurrences. Every other day, we look at the TV, and it's like, oh, another mass shooting. It's fascinating how this really is a problem unique to America. I mean, the conservatives love to point to the Norway shooting when this happened and said, see, look, there's one guy in Norway who went on a mass killing, so therefore it's all even, all the countries are the same. Whether or not you have strict gun control laws, there's going to be shootings. Right? And, you know, I've admitted on multiple occasions, of course, there's going to be a couple people that slip through the cracks and there's going to be mass killings and shootings are going to happen. I mean, you can't stop everybody from getting their hands on a weapon, and you can't prevent all negative things from happening. Sometimes they're just going to happen no matter how hard we prepare. But the level in the U.S. is amazing how much more we have and how it really has become now on a regular basis that these things happen. I mean, there is no effective gun control in the U.S. whatsoever. I was talking to one of my conservative friends 2 days ago. He says, you know, he mentioned the shootings, and I was talking about the gun show loophole, how there's this gigantic loophole where there's no background check, no mental health check, no requirements whatsoever. Somebody could just waltz into one of these gun shows, purchase a gun, no questions asked. And he was like, oh, well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I don't know anything about that. But, yeah, you know, I don't know what the answer is. But you can't just gloss over that. We know that that's the state of affairs in the U.S. today, that they do have this gun show loophole. We discussed how the Republicans voted down the idea. They don't want you to be able to stop terrorists from buying a gun. They think the Second Amendment is that absolute. It's amazing how they just gloss over the area in the Second Amendment that says right to bear arms for a well-regulated militia. The word regulated is right there in the Second Amendment, but they deny it. And furthermore, if you want to take it to its extreme, which I feel like if you want to be ideologically consistent and really take the Second Amendment as pure as you can, if you're a conservative, right, essentially you would have to argue in favor of citizens being able to amass arsenals. I'm talking about tanks, RPGs, grenade launchers, hell, even nuclear weapons if they want them. Oh, it says arms, says right to bear arms. Who are you to define what arms are? The reality of the situation is everybody has their limits, and everybody has what they consider to be bounds of reason. And in a scenario where there seems to be a mass shooting in the U.S. on a weekly basis, you would think that more action is needed. But no, Democrats, Democrats don't make a peep about it. A guy who just recently got fired from his job is the one who committed the shooting. His former colleague he killed, and then he just started randomly opening fire on other innocent people. And cops ended up killing the gunman. The total tally is 8 injured and 2 dead. Very sad. Always sad to hear about stuff like that. The news about Lance Armstrong came out today that he has given up the fight against him. Apparently the USADA, which is the United States Anti-Doping Agency, has been pursuing him for a long time now, trying to prove that he was taking performance-enhancing drugs, steroids, and some others are their claim. And I didn't know this was still going on. And I'm not quite sure what to make of all of the charges, because there's supposedly a plethora of drug tests that Armstrong took that are clean, and he's been referencing them nonstop over the years since the allegations started. The article I read also cited some evidence of guilt, like basically that his wife and his teammate said that he told doctors when he was undergoing cancer treatment in 1996 that he had taken steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs. But, I mean, they didn't specify when exactly that was. That could have theoretically been before he was actually engaging in his major titles and winning his major titles. He was also best friends with an Italian cyclist who got banned because of steroid use. And in 99, he also had trace amounts of a banned inflammatory in his system. But officials said that he was authorized to have that because he was using a cream for saddle sores. And I just want to be fair. In the interest of fairness, both sides do have an argument. Like I said, I just quoted the evidence in favor of him being guilty. But there also were, I'll repeat, repeated drug tests that he had taken along the lines that came back clean. So it's kind of a toss-up as to which side you want to believe. But the punishment might actually be that all of his titles end up getting repealed and his name is wiped clean from the record books. In my opinion, that might be a little much. I mean, I can understand if maybe you want to put an asterisk by his name and I could stomach it. But, I mean, there's a couple overlooked things that come to mind when you're talking about what they're trying to do to Armstrong. First of all, let's assume for a second he's 100% guilty. Is there a direct logical connection between him taking those performance-enhancing drugs and pretending that he actually didn't accomplish the goals he accomplished and the wins he accumulated? I can guarantee you that all the people at the USADA that have been trying to nail Armstrong on these charges for all these years, give them steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs and tell them to race in the same races that Armstrong raced in, and I guarantee you, not only would they not win the races, they wouldn't come in the top 10. So he still had to actually go out there and achieve, even if he was 100% guilty and did take the performance-enhancing drugs. Second, what about the other 6 million cyclists in the world? None of them were doping also? None. If you believe that, I'm sorry. Like, we weren't born yesterday. I mean, if he was taking steroids and performance-enhancing drugs, obviously other people would have been doing the same thing. I feel like the conversation about Armstrong breaches a much bigger debate, which is the debate about should performance-enhancing drugs be something that people in particular sports are allowed to take. And I'm not sure, are we really that sure that being so hard-line on substances is a good idea? First of all, by what standard do we even begin to define what a performance-enhancing drug is? How about caffeine? That'll definitely improve somebody's performance in a lot of sports, but it's as common as anything. Or how about creatine? Creatine is legal, you know, but scientific studies have shown a significant physical and in some cases mental edge if you use creatine. How about something like antidepressants? If somebody is depressed and they take antidepressants, then that'll most likely improve their performance as well, too. Or what about something like Adderall, ADHD medication, if they're prescribed that by a doctor? That's definitely a performance-enhancing drug. It literally makes your focus stronger. And are we really supposed to believe that the people who are so inclined to give everything they have to a sport, their time, their effort, their passion, their life, are not going to be so inclined to do the next logical step and take a substance that might give them a further advantage or a slight edge over the competition? Of course they're going to do that. Oh, and by the way, just to let everybody know, the USADA, which has been pursuing Armstrong and other people like this for years, is a taxpayer-funded group. I don't know what you guys think about that, but let me tell you, to me, that is a complete waste of taxpayer money. I mean, public money funding investigations into sports? Who cares about stuff like that? I mean, that's an area of cutting wasteful spending where I feel like liberals and conservatives can agree, right? I mean, and look, I'm all for if somebody wants to do this investigation, but just don't do it on the taxpayer's dollar. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Hot Whistle on C100. Any guesses on what's the most requested song this afternoon in here?
No, it's not that.
Now playing on C100.
Taylor Swift.
We are never, ever getting back together commercial-free C100.
I remember when we broke up the first time. Seeing this a bit, I've had enough. It's like we haven't seen each other in a month. When you said you needed space. What? Then you come around again and say, baby, I miss you and I swear I'm gonna change. Trust me, remember how that lasted for a day. I say I hate you, we break up, you call me, I love you.
All right, we're back here on Blog Talk Radio, the Kyle Kalinske Show. Is that all that the younger generation likes to talk about? By the way, this is time officially for Grandpa Kyle right now. What did they say the name of that song was? Taylor Swift, We're Never Ever Getting Back Together. Did I hear that right? Ugh. Look, I've never lived in another country. Maybe I just feel like it's because I live here. But is the United States special in the sense that they gratify narcissism more than anything else in the world? Like, I get it. You're famous. You're a teen pop star. And you know, you think the world revolves around you, right? But who really gives a shit about whether or not Taylor Swift is with somebody or not with somebody other than, like, 13-year-old girls who are going to grow out of it in a month and a half anyway. I just can't stand, like, super narcissism masking itself as a catchy beat pop song that has mass appeal. That's what it is. Like, you know, in today's day and age, people are just so self-obsessed. And, I mean, companies have been smart enough to completely exploit that. What is Facebook? But people building web pages that say, look at how great I am. This is me doing this at the beach, and this is me doing this with my family. And here's one of me taking a picture of myself in the mirror. Don't you just love me? No. All right, let's put Grandpa Kyle away for a second, and let's bring Grandpa Pat Robertson into the picture. Ladies and gentlemen, the original cranky, crazy relative that you see at every Thanksgiving dinner. Run clip two.
You know, somehow in this country we feel that we can ignore the laws of God with impunity. And the truth is we can't. God always has the last say. He controls the weather. He controls the rain. And this country is suffering a severe drought. Just think of that. Corn prices are going to about $10 a bushel. Soybean prices are on the way up to $20 a bushel, unheard of highs. But this Mississippi thing is going to be very severe, and it just shows we need to do some praying. You know, I was reading what Solomon was saying, well, the heavens are shut up and there's no rain, and your people call. Well, the heavens have been shut up, and it's time for those folks in the Midwest to start doing some serious praying.
No, but that's like awesome in so many different ways. He genuinely believes, oh, yeah, well, we got, you know, this terrible hurricane coming, and we got drought conditions, and the price of food is going up. By the way, all of this directly related to global warming and climate change. In fact, that is, by definition, global warming and climate change. Right? We've seen more brush fires and wildfires this year than we have in any other time in recorded history. We've seen a ridiculous amount of freak weather occurrences. And Pat Robertson looks at all that happening. See, now the conservatives can't even deny it because it's right in front of their face. It's literally happening to them. Right? How long were they saying, oh, global warming is fake, it's a hoax, the scientists made it up because they want one world government and they want to enslave you and liberals are evil, right? They did that as long as they could, and then they said, okay, global warming is happening, but maybe it's a good thing. You know, we all like warm weather. Maybe we'll go to the beach some more. Okay, and now they see the actual effects of global warming happening. Food prices are suspected to rise 14% next year. You know, natural water supplies, fresh water supplies, are running low because it's been unseasonably hot in many areas in the Midwest. Right? More brush fires like I was discussing before. Pat Robertson looks at all that, and what does he say? Well, time to pray. Oh, Pat. Guys, this isn't on the Christian Broadcasting Network. This is on ABC Family. 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 I often talk about on the show how I really don't have, you know, that much of a problem with what I like to call moderate religion. If you're a cafeteria Catholic or just a regular non-religious Muslim or whatever religion you may be a part of, right? But the more you realize how much people like Pat Robertson and fundamentalist Christians skew the debate in the U.S., the more you want to kind of throw that idea out the window and say, no, you guys give legitimacy to the really crazy people in your party. Read Sam Harris's book, End of Faith. He does a fantastic job. And in Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, he does the same argument they pose, where they basically say, listen, it really isn't okay to be a moderate religious person, because if you're a moderate religious person, you are the sane voice that gives the insane people some form of legitimacy to get away with saying what they want to say. And listen, ABC Family is a channel that plays Whose Line Is It Anyway, which is the most, like, non-controversial, comedic, funny, nothing show, right? Just normal show. They play reruns of Boy Meets World. But this is the same channel where you got people like Pat Robertson. We talked about it on the show the other week, where Pat Robertson and his guests hold hands and they pray to, oh, I see somebody in Missouri has a broken hip and I want to let you know, don't go to the doctors because Jesus is going to heal you. Oh, hell, Jesus. No, this is what they do on the show. I couldn't make that up. This guy ran for president of the United States. Okay? In Congress, there's only one person. Out of 535 people, there's only one person who considers themselves to be non-religious. And then meanwhile, at the same time all this is going on, you have Bill O'Reilly out there saying, oh, culture wars, they're trying to come and take your Bibles away. Oh, how dare they? Oh, those atheists are running the show. They're so arrogant. How can you possibly come to that conclusion? Do they have an equal show, by the way, on ABC Family that gives scientists a free voice? Pat Robertson's show is called The 700 Club. Is The 800 Club the science show that comes on afterwards? Right? Because if that's not the case, then maybe it's the Christians who kind of skew the debate and run the country into the ground, and not the arrogant atheists as Bill O'Reilly would have you believe. And look, I just want to make this point, because some people would listen to what I'm saying right now and say, you know what, Kyle, you're being a little bit too hard on these people, because there's not a debate or a war going on of ideas between religion and science. They're just separate issues. It's apples and oranges, right? And maybe to a certain extent that's true, because some people are able to compartmentalize their beliefs and be completely rational about political issues, and then maybe just go and say a prayer at church on Sunday and believe in a personal God, but they don't take this stuff seriously about being anti-gay and anti-abortion and not believing in global warming, right? But let me just say this. It's not a coincidence that polls have shown 93% of the scientific community considers themselves to be atheist or agnostic, basically non-religious. And of the remaining 7%, a majority of that 7% would consider themselves to be deists, which basically believes you believe in some kind of creator, but not a personal God who reads your thoughts and murmurs to you, right? And that's, by the way, what most of the founding fathers were, deists, which had crushed that notion that we're a Christian nation. This is the first country in history that was founded on the idea of separation between church and state. But yet the ones who like to claim so strongly that this is their country in today's day and age are the evangelical Christians. This country was founded specifically to escape religious persecution. So if anything, the atheists and the agnostics and the deists and the Hindus and the Buddhists and the people who are particularly not in the majority are the ones who should be hailed as the real Americans. Look, in an 80% Christian nation, you're gonna have the unfortunate Pat Robertson spreading his lunacy on ABC Family. That's on a family network, man. This is the same guy who said that the earthquake in Haiti was caused because Haiti made a pact with the devil. Sounds like a good topic of conversation for a family network, right? I mean, that's like watching Cartoon Network and seeing a good episode of Rugrats, and then that episode of Rugrats is followed by a KKK parade. All right, let's move forward. Mitt Romney was taking shots at John Boehner. I love this. We were talking about how Mitt Romney kind of said fuck you to his base the other day, how he compared the Tea Party to a ferret in a dishwasher, because one time there was a ferret stuck in his dishwasher, went to go take it out, the ferret bit him. By the way, he might want to go get, like, tested for rabies or something. That's not okay. But he compared them to that because he's like, yeah, even when you try to help them, they're like, you know, they'll just bite you and be like, oh, because they're crazy. They're like, oh, I believe in birtherism. Just calm down, hillbilly. Like, let the adults in the party take over. So Mitt kind of said fuck you to the base, which is going to hurt him. And now he was taking shots at John Boehner, who's, I mean, the encapsulation of an establishment Republican. Represents the corporatist wing of the Republican Party perfectly. And he said how, yeah, I'm an emotional guy, but I don't cry like Boehner. In other words, Boehner's a bitch in Mitt Romney's eyes. I believe we have some clip of Boehner crying as well. This should be fun.
Kids, I can't go to a school anymore. I used to go to a lot of schools. They see all these little kids running around. Can't talk about it.
Why?
Making sure that these kids have a shot at the American dream.
Let it out, John. Let it out, John. Oh, John, oh. He just cares so much about your kids. Oh, John, he cares so much about them that he just doesn't want to give them health care. I mean, this guy, it's such a clown. I can't determine if he's just crazy and actually gets super emotional about the most mundane questions or if he's acting. Right? I care so much about your kids that I just want to cut their Social Security. We got a little bit more footage. Yeah, take a listen.
Hello, I'm Debbie Fish,
and tonight I'm interviewing the newly elected Speaker of the House, John Boehner. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on being elected Speaker of the House.
Thank you. It has been a very long road. I've worked very hard to get here.
Yes, and you have certainly earned it. Now, my first question is for the current financial...
I've spent my entire life working to achieve the American dream.
Oh, yes, John. Tell them about the American dream.
To go from mopping floors to when I was 10 years old.
Are you okay?
I'm sorry. I'm okay. I'm fine.
Okay, let's skip to some questions that are a little more fun.
Let it out, John. Let it out.
What do you want to bring to vote? We'll cut all leadership budgets by 5%?
We have to start making cuts. And we have to do it across the board for every department. Especially so our children can grow up and to be able to live the American dream.
You've got to be able to answer some questions without the crying, okay?
I'm sorry.
Okay. No tears needed for this next time.
I'm sorry.
Okay, can you use your words?
I'll use my words.
WikiLeaks exposed that China is not happy with North Korea. How do you think this information will affect six-party talk?
One time, I was at a party, and I was talking, and there were children, and they were running around, and I just want to make sure that those children get to live the American dream.
John, is there anything that won't make you cry?
Of course. I'm sorry.
What are your thoughts on the movie WALL-E?
He was a little robot, and he lived in garbage, and then he blasted off to space, and then he saved mankind.
Okay, what do you think of, I don't know, grapes?
They're little, and then they're squashed, and then they defy all odds, and they're made into wine, and then wine makes people happy.
What do you think about this chair, huh? What do you think about this f***ing chair? It's a chair. What do you think about it?
That chair was a tree that nobody cared about. And then it was made into a chair. The American dream!
Let it out, John. Let it all out, big guy. That was awesome. Just to give you guys some information on that. That's MJN Comedy. MJN Comedy on YouTube. That was good stuff there. But, I mean, that's not too far from the truth. So, he cried in a 60 Minutes interview. He cried when he was giving a speech at the RNC. He cried when there was a St. Patrick's Day Irish festival when they were just playing traditional Irish music. He was sitting there fucking crying. He cries every time he mentions the American dream, literally. Now, look, like I said, I'm totally not buying the idea that, oh, he cares so much about the kids in the American dream that he just tears up every time he talks about it. Right? I mean, the only two things I could possibly see is that he's either cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs or he's faking. Maybe that stuff plays with people, though. I mean, I know I'm a cynical bastard, and most people don't share my sentiments, but at the same time, think about when Hillary Clinton cried in the 08 primary campaign against Obama, where I guess she lost like one or two in a row, and they asked her touchy questions. She started tearing up. And then she won the next like three primaries, and she got a gigantic bump in a poll the day after when they saw her crying. I mean, we elected George Bush twice, and polls actually did show that one of the main things they liked about George Bush was that he's a guy they want to have a beer with. That same old line that you hear so many pundits use is actually true. They found that out in a poll. So, hey, if that's the kind of things, you know, John Boehner's, he probably knows that. He's probably not a dumb guy. He knows stuff like that plays with the American public. Why do you think every time you see Obama about to give a press conference or talk to the media, he's always doing a little sit-in with people in, like, a town hall format drinking a beer? Because they did polling. They know people like it when the president acts like a normal person. Man, these politicians, it is such kabuki theater, man. And then all that could be going on while they're literally fucking you over in 13 different ways. Listen to this. Mitt Romney's energy plan, which we brought up in a story yesterday, how he didn't, in a room full of 125 of his donors, he said, look, I would give you more information on my energy plan, but it turns out the media's here. We don't want them catching on, eh? Eh? Turns out Romney's energy plan was basically written by the oil companies. He goes up to them, he goes, what do you guys want me to do? Whatever you want me to do, I will do it. I am your humble servant. I am a corporate robot. I have no principles. I don't give a shit about the middle class. Him and Ryan just released their plan. Listen to this. There's 21 pages in their energy proposal. The number of mentions of climate change, zero. Number of mentions of oil, 154. Right now, there is $2.4 billion a year in oil subsidies, and Romney basically proposes to double that, even though the oil companies are in the top 10 most profitable companies in the world. If there's anybody who doesn't need a subsidy, it's the oil companies. By the way, subsidies, if you're not too familiar with government and how it functions and what they do, a subsidy is supposed to be, in theory, for businesses that kind of need a kickstart and are an industry that the government deems to be something that's good for the future. So, for example, maybe green energy would be something along those lines, right? Wind power, solar power, trying to get off the tit of foreign fuel and fossil fuel, which is... Why would we want to be involved in all that trouble in the Middle East, right, and still be caught up on fossil fuels? But no, they want to go. Romney wants to go down that road because, as you'll see in a minute, they're paying him. You're not going to be surprised to learn. Here you go. Here's the number right here. $1.7 million is what the oil companies have given to the Romney campaign so far. Gee, I wonder why he's not looking into solar energy and wind energy. From their point of view, the oil companies, that $1.7 million was an investment. And guess what? The facts show it was a damn good investment because they own Mitt Romney's ass. Listen to this. In one day, the oil company makes $342 million in profits. In one day, oil company CEOs make $60,000. That's each CEO makes $60,000. In one day, oil companies do 1 billion pounds of carbon dioxide pollution. I'm sorry, that's just carbon pollution. Every single day, oil companies spend $167,000 to lobby Congress, and every day they receive $6.6 million in tax breaks. That means for every single dollar they spend in lobbying, they get $30 in tax breaks. In 1 hour, the oil companies make $14.4 million in profit, and every hour, despite those profits, they get an extra $270,000 in tax breaks. There was a 1995 loophole lobbied for by the oil companies that allows them to extract oil from public land and sell it anywhere they want and pay nothing back to the U.S. taxpayers. That means that they're screwing us out of $1.5 billion a year in revenue. Listen, only in a political climate where politicians are getting millions of dollars from companies would they allow those companies to take from public land and then just keep it as if it's their land. I mean, people really have no clue. I mean, they might have a gut, visceral feeling that, maybe some companies are fucking us over, right? Did you hear those staggering numbers, man? I mean, we're at a time now in U.S. history where we have ridiculous deficits and debts, and we could raise $1.5 billion in profits right now if the politicians decided, you know what, let's strike down this ridiculous loophole that they bought us for. That's our land and our oil, and they just take it, and they're a private company, and they make billions of dollars in profits as a result. Man, we are getting massively screwed over. We'll be right back.
Whip, you might lose your grip when the landlord say that you do for rent, and the grass so green on the other side, making you wanna run straight through the fence. Open up the fridge about 20 times, but still can't find no food in it. That's foolishness. And sometimes I wonder why we care so much about the way we look and the way we talk and the way we act and the clothes we bought. How much that cost? Does it even really matter? Cause if life is an uphill battle, we all trying to climb on the same old ladder, in the same boat with the same old paddle. Why so shallow? I'm just asking. Most of us ain't Hollywood actors, but if it's all for one and one for all, then maybe one day we all could ball. Do it one time for the underdog. Sincerely yours, I'm one of y'all. What Bobby Ray wrote for us. When the tide gets too high and the sea up underneath gets so deep, and you feel like you're just another person getting lost in the crowd where you're pie in the nosebleeds. Because we've both been there, yeah, both of us, but we still stand tall with our shoulders up. And even though we always against the odds, these are the things that have molded us. And if life hadn't chosen us, sometimes I wonder where I would have wound up. If it was up to me, I'd make a new blueprint, see it build up from the ground up. Hey, this is all for one and one for all, then maybe one day we all could ball. Time for the underdog, from Bobby Ray to all of y'all.
Train. You're listening to 100 Minutes Commercial Free.
All right, we're back here on Blog Talk Radio, the Kyle Kalinske Show, roughly 45 minutes past the hour. The number to call up is 646-478-5115. Listen, I just want to go off script here real quick for a second. I'll jump back into the stories we had scheduled, but I'm sitting here, CNN's on. I see at the bottom of the screen, it says, Iran speeding up uranium enrichment 20%, new report says. Look, as far as I'm concerned, the White House, under both Republican and Democratic rule, and the media have lost credibility in terms of beating the drums of war. Ever since what happened in 2003 with Iraq and Saddam and, oh, he's got yellow cake and all, he's coming to kill us and we got to fight him over there, so we don't have to fight him over here. And Saddam did 9/11, everybody run and hide. Oh, what are we going to do? Let's bomb everybody in sight. Right? This idea, first of all, think about the argument that conservatives love to use in terms of guns. Right? Well, obviously, if everybody has guns, then the safety level is raised because there's so many more good people than bad people. And it just so makes it that if everybody has guns, then if a bad person starts shooting, then a good person will get up and shoot them and we'll be better. More guns equals more safety. And that idea stems from a theory called game theory, which is based on the idea of mutually assured destruction. So there's a high-pressured equilibrium, if you will, if everybody has weapons. Well, where are the conservatives on that issue when it comes to nuclear weapons? By the way, I love the hypocrisy. We are the only country that has ever dropped a nuclear weapon, yet we're the most panicky. Like, oh, somebody's going to get us! Somebody's going to get us! You know, we had no reservations about dropping it on Japan and killing a lot of civilians. Right? And then it just so happens that all the information they were giving us about Iraq from the White House and the media, they were dead wrong. We were duped. We were duped. And then I love how after we knew we were duped, we still didn't pull out of Iraq right away. Gee, how's that for a novel idea, a novel country, a noble country? Let's get attacked by somebody. Pretend somebody else attacked us. Invade that area, and then when we know for sure that they didn't attack us, stay in there anyway. Fuck it. We're already there. As if fighting a war is like going to eat at a restaurant. Well, honey, we're already here. We might as well stay here. That's why every time I see these stories about Iran, I just roll my eyes, man. I mean, we propped up a dictator there in 1953. Overthrew a democratic government. Now, granted, the democratic government very well may have been kooky, crazy, and super religious, but you know what? That's none of my fucking business. I'm an American. We're in America, not Iran. That's their country. Leave them alone. Right? So we overthrew them, propped up a guy who would serve our interests, because, of course, we're fucking selfish as all hell, and then the Iranian people get pissed off about that, and we go, whoa, what? Oh, you guys don't like us? Oh, you're evil. Instead of actually using our brains and connecting the dots, we just jump right to, well, we're good and they're evil. I guess that's got to be the answer. Oh, please, like Iran's any threat to us whatsoever. Destroy them at the push of a button if we wanted to. Our military, we talked about this yesterday, our military spends more than the next 14 militaries combined. Yeah, how tough are we? We're freaking out about little Iran. A country that probably has internet stuff back in 1997. Where you hear the dial-up as you're trying to get on. All right, glad I got that off my chest. Let's move forward here. Back to Mitt Romney. So Mitt just made a joke today about the birth certificate. He said, quote, no one has ever asked to see my birth certificate. They know that this is the place that I was born and raised. Oh, Mitt. Oh, Mitt, that's hysterical and that's totally not racist at all. When Obama has presented all of the proof in the world to put this mocked-up debate about his birth to an end. And Mitt is still playing that card. Well, that means he's only bringing it up to try and point out that Obama's not really all that American. Now, let me ask you, do you think they'd do that to Bill Clinton or John Edwards or Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi or any other Democrat? No, because those Democrats aren't black. See, he's trying to play to his base of super crazy Pat Robertson watchers. Right? He's saying, oh look, his skin color is slightly different. He can't be like you good, honorable white people. Look, how many times have we been through this with these morons? People went to the Hawaiian archives and found a newspaper that announced his birth from 1961. What does he have? A time machine he sent Bill Ayers back in to plan it as a massive conspiracy? And he released his long-form and short-form birth certificates. By the way, I love how I'm trying to reason and use logic with people who have no interest in the facts, as if I'm getting anywhere with them. And by the way, what the fuck are the consequences anyway? What does Mitt or any of the birthers think Obama's going to do? What is he, a Manchurian candidate for Kenya or Indonesia? Is he plotting to take over the U.S.? But then you bring up, oh, well, he hasn't done it in his first 3.5 years in office when he could have. So why hasn't he yet, Berthers? Please, enlighten me. Oh, wait a second. I know. Wait. He's waiting to do it until his second term. It's part of his genius master plan, of course, to put us in FEMA camps. Duh. How did I not see it? They're all fucking dunces, man. By the way, Donald Trump, who has been championing this idiocy from day one, he tweeted, "Now I want to see Obama's college transcripts to see what he wrote down as his birthplace." Oh, come on. Donald, you're a walking parody of yourself. You're a joke of a human being. You think you're this special person. I literally have not met a single person in my entire life who has said a kind word about Donald Trump. And he claims, oh, this businessman, this capitalist, I'm a mighty Donald Trump. I'm so smart and brilliant. You know, he filed for bankruptcy multiple times. The guy couldn't make a casino profitable. That's a business where people literally just walk in and give you money. Now all he does is he just sells the rights to his name. And by the way, if my father was as rich as Donald Trump's father was, I'd be doing just fine myself, and I wouldn't have gone into bankruptcy. And this is actually a good segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about. Some GOP groups are now concerned about too much of a focus from the Romney campaign on social issues. They don't want Mitt and Ryan to discuss them. And to me, I find that super interesting because that's basically an admission that their ideas aren't popular with the American people. At a time when the focus was supposed to be on the economy, remember that was supposed to be the Republicans' big focus? Part of the party platform is endorsing a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, of course. A constitutional amendment to ban abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, which is basically what this gigantic Todd Akin controversy is about. And now there's even discussion about perhaps being in favor of a new constitutional amendment to even further gun rights, even though they already have everything they want, and we've had about 1 million shootings in the past 17 minutes. I mean, the disconnect from the Republican base with reality is mind-boggling. But, you know, that is going to be, I really shouldn't complain, because at the end of the day, that is probably going to be one of the main reasons why Mitt Romney will lose the race, because, and this is something that applies to Donald Trump as well. See, Donald Trump whenever he goes out there and gives a speech and talks about birtherism and that kind of stuff. See, in his mind, he's thinking, well, yeah, everybody agrees with what I'm saying. Because in his little conservative bubble, everybody around there is, go get him, Donald. Everybody cheers him on. They, you know. And Mitt thinks, in his little bubble, he thinks, yeah, when I bring up these social issues and I'm more hardline on abortion and I talk more about gun rights, I mean, only if you're living in your own little bubble can you have the gall, after such disastrous shootings in the U.S., to step out and say, well, this shows us even more that we need to preserve gun rights. What? Look, just like the 1960s where the Democrats had to go into restructuring and reestablishing, and they didn't get another president all the way until Clinton in 92, the Republicans are going to have to go through the same thing. Because they're so out of touch with the American mainstream, and the two branches of their party just have no mass appeal. You have the corporatist party. By the way, the only reason they're able to hang on to any strands of legitimacy is because they get massive amounts of money from big business. Right? I mean, you guys remember when they had the first... Let's suppose, oh, Tea Party is such a grassroots movement. Yes, right? That's what the media was telling us. Turns out the Koch brothers, among other people, were funding those supposed grassroots movement. They would make the signs for the people going to the Tea Party events. It was literally a top-down fake grassroots movement. That's the only reason that the Republican Party has maintained any form of legitimacy and is hanging on by some strands. Is because they have all the money and all the resources in the world. Because their ideas in and of themselves are anything but popular. You know, if you're a middle class or lower class person in the U.S., if you're a member of the working poor, and you think the answer is to vote for the same person that Forbes would vote for, that's troubling. You know, you might want to go read a textbook or two or read some history, because they're not on your side, man. They're not on your side. The only fraction of the so-called conservative movement that, in my opinion, has any type of real legitimacy and has somewhat substantive ideas, one could argue, is the actual libertarian branch. And I just want to be clear, I disagree with them on almost all economic issues, right? I mean, they're in favor of some radical things like getting rid of the EPA and getting rid of the Department of Education, among other things. But at least they have some kind of semblance of principles when it comes to social issues, right? So a good example of this, Rand Paul, this is a story that just broke today, is pushing for hemp legalization. I didn't even know that hemp was illegal. Right? Turns out 17 states have already passed pro-hemp legislation, while another 10 have removed barriers to its production. And hemp is illegal on the federal level. And according to the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution, the federal government trumps any state laws if they want to, just like for the same reason that they could raid marijuana dispensaries in California, they could do the same thing if they want to with hemp. And, you know, I find that mind-boggling, because listen, that just shows you how crazy our politics have become, because not only is marijuana criminalized and illegal, even hemp, which is a legitimate product used for legitimate things, like even clothing. There's a billion things you could use hemp for. I mean, one of my coworkers would talk about hemp that used to come in the form of lotion. It like has some kind of therapeutic effects too. And even that's illegal because it's related to marijuana. I mean, that's crazy, man. And I love John Yarmuth, who's a Democrat of Kentucky, probably like one of those blue dog Democrats, about this issue. He said, quote, there's just too many major issues, budget issues, tax issues, farm bill issues, things that are going to take precedence over hemp. So hemp should be further down the list. That's just dead wrong, man. People always use that argument to stifle progression of good ideas. The argument is like, shh, we'll get to it later. Shh, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Right? But the reality is that the budget, taxes, and farming, which are the three issues he mentioned, are all directly tied to legalizing hemp or marijuana because it's an entire new industry that creates revenue and more tax dollars for the government and definitely more jobs. But again, trying to reason with the majority of our politicians, I might as well be talking to a brick wall.
Like super soul, go hard, I run the Theater presented by PC Richardson. I got tickets right after Owl City with Carly Rae Jepsen. Z100.
It's always a good time.
Good time.
are back here on Blog Talk Radio, the Kyle Kalinske Show. One more time, I'll give you the number to call up. It is 646-478-5115. I will do my best to continue to peek at the switchboard in case anybody calls. Sometimes it's a little difficult when I'm in the middle of a story because I got other things up on the screen there, but I will do my best. They are discussing now how there is kind of a double threat facing the GOP convention, one of them being the fact that there's a massive hurricane that's about to hit while it's going on, which obviously is not a good thing. By the way, I wonder where Pat Robertson is on that one. Right? Remember when Hurricane Katrina was caused by the gay pride parade and our decline of moral values? That's exactly what he said when Katrina hit. Like, oh, it's because of gays. Obviously. Well, what now? What did the Republicans do, Pat? It's so immoral. I thought the Republicans were perfect. Jesus is putting his wrath down on the Republicans now. I don't understand. And then the other threat is supposedly there's going to be, like, anarchist. Protests that are going on. So, I mean, if these anarchists really start acting a fool and, like, causing damage to areas, that, I mean, that would be so disheartening, man, because when people like that do that, that just puts such a bad name on liberals, because it allows the Republicans to go, oh, look at these liberals, they're so violent and evil, how dare they? I mean, there was a YouTube video of a guy wearing those masks like in that Natalie Portman movie where there's like a fascist dictatorship. I forgot, the name's not coming to me now, but I guess they were talking about how they're gonna protest. And look, I'm always in favor of civil disobedience and protests and everything, but you have to keep it within the bounds of reason. You can't do damage to property that's illegal, and rightfully so, it's illegal. You can't. I mean, I feel like I'm explaining to second graders now, but I hate it when you give ammo to conservative Republicans on their worldview of liberals, how they're evil, right? And you know they're going to do it. They're just going to take. If these anarchists do happen to protest in a not okay way, they're gonna take it, and they're gonna go, look, all liberal Democrats are evil, obviously. Which couldn't be further from the truth, but they don't really care too much about truth, so it won't bother them. LL Cool J is such a badass. Turns out somebody broke into his house and I guess was in the process of robbing something. He broke the guy's nose, broke the guy's jaw, and broke the guy's ribs, and held him down until the police came. That's crazy, man. Like, you know how when you're growing up you learn about, like, the fight or flight instinct? You know, I always felt like if you put me in one of those situations, I don't know how I would react. But to keep it real, I feel like I'd be more inclined to just bolt. I'd be like, fuck, somebody's here. What if he has a gun? What if he does this? My mind would go at 73,000 miles an hour. I wouldn't know what to do. I'd call the cops and panic like a little girl. I mean, that's super badass. There's political condoms that this condom factory started making. Romney's condom, there's a picture of Romney on it, says, good for any position. Ba-dum-tsh. You get it? Because he flip-flopped on every issue under the sun, and because you could fuck in different positions. Ah, right? Yeah. And Obama's condom says, quote, won't break as easy as his promises. Oh. So Martin Bashir is an MSNBC host. He's not on at a time where I'm usually watching MSNBC, so I'm not too familiar with his work. But it turns out he had this Republican strategist on his show, and he was talking to, let me see if I have that guy's name, where is it? Trey Hardin is the name of the Republican strategist. So Bashir had this guy on. He showed him a clip of General Dempsey, who's one of the top military officials involved in the wars. And the clip of General Dempsey was basically talking about how he's disappointed in a group of anti-Obama military members. Remember, we were discussing the other day about how the Swift voters of John Kerry were similar to this new group, which is doing the same thing, saying that Obama shouldn't be taking credit for killing bin Laden, et cetera, right? So this guy Dempsey is saying he's disappointed in those people and they shouldn't be doing that. So Bashir had this guy on. He basically asked the guy, he said, look, if it turns out that General Dempsey, of all people, is saying that this is not appropriate for a military group to be bashing Obama, their commander-in-chief, then who are you to disagree? That's like the gist of what he said. And Hardin answered by saying, I'm not surprised he's backing up the president because he serves the president. That's basically his boss, right? So Bashir kind of seemed offended by that, and he was like, oh, I can't let you get away with that. How dare you retract that statement? And the guy didn't retract the statement, and Bashir kind of, like, spoke over him and then moved on to the next segment, kind of kicked him off the show. Right? Now, I've yet to hear any other pundits weigh in on this, but this was one of the leading stories showing on Huffington Post. But just to give you guys an idea about how I feel on the issue, I think Bashir was 1,000,000% wrong. First of all, I always try to imagine, like, what if the shoe was on the other foot, right? What if it was a conservative host and a liberal strategist was on, and, you know, they question the credibility of somebody in the military? Well, it would be only appropriate in so many different ways. I mean, I'm reminded specifically of a segment that was on Fox News going back a couple months now, actually probably more than that, probably like 9 or 10 months ago, where they're discussing, I believe it was the war in Afghanistan with certain generals. And the generals were so vehemently pro-war, and they just used the same old stale arguments like, oh, we got to stay the course, and we got to make sure that we keep doing, and there's been signs of improvement. And this, I remember this was particularly at a time when the violence was up. And they used the idea that the violence was up as a fact in their favor that, well if more people are getting killed, then that shows that we're making progress. But wait a second, you've used the same argument when the violence is down, so which is it? If there's more violence, are we making progress, or if there's less violence, are we making progress? You tell me. Right? You can't have it both ways. That's a logical inconsistency. That's just a flat-out fallacy. It's not possible for both things to be true. Right? And then whenever it's somebody who's in the military or has military experience or kind of, you know, has that air of a superior opinion about them, people always kind of bite their tongue and walk on eggshells and make sure, well, don't say anything this guy disagrees with too much because then you're the evil guy, right? And at that time, I was like, fuck that, man. He's wrong. He's flat out wrong. So, of course, you know, you could call somebody out if they're in the military and they're being ridiculous in terms of policy. Just because you're in the military doesn't mean you henceforth have trumped everybody else in the world on your opinion on issues regarding the military. That doesn't mean you're a policy wonk or you're right if you're in the military. That's just like when John McCain cited his war experience as a reason why he should be president. Well, that's obviously not true. There's plenty of people who are in the military who aren't qualified to be president. So, I mean, full disclosure, what the Republican strategist said, which, well, you know, I'm not surprised that Obama, I mean, that this general backed Obama because, come on, like, that's his boss. I mean, he's there to serve him, right? I mean, that's, not only is that not offensive, there's a degree of that and an element of that that might be completely true. Oh, and by the way, the generals who were on Fox News that I was just talking about, turns out they were so pro-war and so in favor of war. I did a little research on what they were doing at that current time. They worked for defense contractors, private defense contractors. Well, golly gee, why am I not surprised that they come out in favor of a pro-war position then? This is exactly what Dwight Eisenhower warned about, the military-industrial complex. Just the flat-out submission of the American government over to private contractors. Look, I feel like one of the biggest problems that we run into when we're analyzing politics and policy and all that stuff is that people are so, they never bring into question somebody's credibility, right? It's almost like, oh, that's so disrespectful. How dare you? He's a former general. He used to be in the military, right? But no, it's completely relevant to the question, who's paying him now? If the guy's getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars from a private defense agency, and of course he's going to get his ass on TV and say he's pro these wars and it's the right thing to be doing, because he's paid to do that. That's exactly like when these politicians come out in favor of giving oil subsidies to ExxonMobil. Turns out when you check the public record and find out that ExxonMobil gave them hundreds of thousands of dollars to run their campaign, there's a direct conflict of interest. And the level to which the corruption has gotten, where it's almost completely normalized now. Right? I mean, I'm shocked. At how people have not connected the dots and just kind of thrown all the bums out. And the Supreme Court is largely a blame, too. The Supreme Court is the supposedly respected body that has entered us into a new corporatist age in United States history. Did you know that the Supreme Court, back before, the court went through a small period where it was a liberal court, and that's, you know, when you had, like, the Civil Rights Act was passed, like, the 60s, around that time, we had a pretty liberal court. They were pretty much on the right side of issues. Did you know, before that, I'm going back to, like, early 1900s, there was a period in the court where they were so corrupt, so bought and owned by the richest segment of the population that they looked at the Constitution and just completely pulled out of their ass via some loose interpretation that there was something called a right to contract. The right to contract was used as a justification for having no weekend and no minimum wage. Do you understand what that means? That means they use the word contract. Oh, your right to contract, right? It sounds high-minded and professorial, like a bunch of policy wonks sat down and drew up this long idea. No, basically what it was is somebody sued, I believe it was a bread company. I'm forgetting the exact name of the case. I want to say Lochner, but I'm not 100% sure. He sued the company he worked for and said that he was working too many hours and he wasn't paid enough. And basically, the owner of the business defended himself by saying, look, man, you know, whatever, I'm paying this guy a couple cents an hour, and he works like 13-hour days. But look, I have right here this sheet of paper that he signed that says this is what he wants to do. So I guess if he wants to do it, then who is he to change his mind now? He signed. And, oh, the intellectual Supreme Court looked at that and said, yeah, nailed it. Get the fuck out of my court. And don't talk to me about a minimum wage or about having restrictions on what the work week is. Look, when money and corporate power has such a gigantic influence over our politics, then this is what you get as a result. You get ridiculous policy. We live in a day and age where it's normal and it's the rule of law that corporations and super rich 1% business owners can essentially lobby to get exactly what they want in our policy. And that is diametrically opposed to what the idea of government is. Government is specifically there to take certain things off the table. Those are the things we call rights that can't be taken away from us no matter what. Right? And to do things that profit-making industries are simply too greedy to handle. Things like healthcare, things like college, right? Things like a social safety net, unemployment insurance, to make sure that you don't die homeless at a young age when things just don't happen to be going your way and you're not from money and you can't really catch a break in life, right? And the Republicans and the conservatives, they hide behind this idea and they're able to perpetuate this kind of thinking because they pretend like the United States is a meritocracy. Now, a meritocracy by definition means that, you know, the harder you work, the further you go, period, right? And, you know, when you're young and you're explained how the system works in the U.S. and in other places of the world, I mean, that makes sense at face value, right? You're like, all right, whatever, like, the harder I work, the farther I'll go, the more money I'll make, et cetera, et cetera. And then as you get older, you look around you. And you start piecing things together, and you realize, wait a second. Now, this guy here makes $50,000 a year. And he stays at work about 4 hours longer than the boss does. And he's consistently more busier than the boss is. And he gets no vacation time. And $75 a week comes out of his paycheck for health insurance. And, right, you could just go on all day, pile on, pile on, pile on. And then you realize that what you were thinking is, of course it's not a meritocracy. Of course it's not the harder you work, the farther you go. There's 17,000 other factors that go into it. Who do you know? Right? How much money were you born into? What kind of position in the class and in the subcultures within the culture do you fit into, and what opportunities are open to you based off that? Where do you live? Right? There's so many different factors that go into it. And such a tiny, small percentage of that is actually based off of how hard you work. We did a story just yesterday talking about how for-profit colleges charge you for student loans charge you higher interest rates, right? They just flat out cost more. They take a lot of money from the government in grants, so they should really be public institutions, but they're private and they're for-profit, right? And then they have a worse outcome in terms of job placement when you get out of there. If that's not a giant scam, then what is? But I could go on for days about this stuff. Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Who's opening the iHeartRadio Music Festival in Vegas? They're going to be here tonight, 9 o'clock, live co-hosting the iHeartRadio 99 Plus. Right after that, a trip possibly to the MTV VMAs. We get you qualified. 9 tonight. I'm wide awake. I'm wide awake.
All right, we're back here on Blog Talk Radio, the Kyle Kalinske Show. It appears as if they're going to have, like, some documentaries on Obama and on Romney leading up to the conventions. And they were just showing a clip and an interview with Mitt Romney, and one of the things, I guess, they were talking about, one of his sons almost died in one way or another. I'm really not sure. The TV's on mute, but, you know, oftentimes in political campaigns, this is what they've become in the U.S. We treat our politicians as if they're celebrities in the sense that we want to know all the things that happened in their personal life. Right? Now, look, I'm not trying to poo-poo the idea that Romney almost lost his son and say how that's not important, because obviously it's important to him, and rightfully so. That's his son. Right? But is that – if you're running for president – particularly to run the nation. This isn't just for, like, a local office or even a state or whatever, right? Shouldn't not only most of the discussion, shouldn't the entire discussion be based off of policy? What ideas do you want to implement for the country, right? I mean, maybe I'm more cynical than your average citizen, but that's all I give a shit about, is what ideas you want to implement. What policies do you want to implement? Because that's the only thing that is going to directly affect both my life and my fellow citizens' lives. What do you want to do in terms of Social Security? What do you want to do in terms of Medicare? What do you want to do in terms of the two wars that we put on the credit card? What do you want to do in terms of the debt and the deficit? Right? And this is why, even going back all the way to the Clinton administration, oh my God, he got a blowjob, guys. He has sex. What is wrong with him? Right? Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? All right. Listen to this. This is a Texas judge.
This is Judge Dredd.
No, that is Judge Dredd, and that is an advertisement. Hold one second.
Lubbock County Judge Tom Head and Commissioner Mark Heinrich went into great detail last night on our air about why it's necessary to raise the tax rate by 1.7 cents the next fiscal year. Here's the crux of the matter: an across-the-board pay increase is needed for the attorneys on the DA's staff to keep them from being poached by higher-paying counties. And the sheriff needs to expand his staff by 7 deputies to reduce call response times, minimize officer fatigue, and reduce the turnaround time for investigations. But that's not all. Judge Head says he and the county must be prepared for many contingencies, one that he particularly fears. If President Obama is reelected, he is going to try to hand over the sovereignty of the United States to the UN.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's going to happen when that happens?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking worst case scenario.
Right, I understand.
Civil unrest, civil disobedience, civil war, maybe. I mean, we're not talking just a few riots here and demonstrations. We're talking Lexington, Concord, take up arms and get rid of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what's going to happen if we do that, if the public decides to do that?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to send in UN troops. I don't want them in Lubbock County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stand in front of their armored personnel carrier and say, you're not coming in here.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheriff, I've already asked him, I said, you going to back me? He said, yeah, I'll back you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want a bunch of rookies back there.
True.
I want trained, equipped, seasoned veteran officers to back me.
That's a judge, ladies and gentlemen. That is a Texas judge. No, I what do I even say? Civil war. For what? For what? What has Obama done that's so radical that you have to take up arms Okay, by the way, if I'm the Secret Service or the CIA or the FBI or anti-terrorism committees within the U.S. government, I'm looking at that asshole. You can't say that about Civil War. I love how these Republicans have no connection to reality, man. What has Obama done that's so radical? Please. I have time. I will wait for you to give me an answer. My email is kylekolinsky@hotmail.com. Same name as the show. Just that at hotmail.com. Please tell me, what has he done that's so... Listen, back in 2008 when he was running, right? One of the discussions was the tax rate. McCain said keep it the same, 36%. Obama said, you know what, maybe raise it to 39%. That's 3 points higher, 3 percentage points higher. That's exactly what the tax rate was under the Clinton administration when we had one of the most booming economies in the history of the United States. That's radical? And by the way, he caved on that. He didn't even raise it to 39%. The second the debate got brought up in Congress, I had to change of heart. The Republicans twisted my arm. Oh, I can't do it. I guess the 36%. I guess we'll keep it the same. Right, Obama. It has nothing to do with the fact that you're bought off by the same politicians that the Republicans are. Goldman Sachs was the number one contributor to his campaign. Like, this guy, Obama, is the most mainstream politician cut from the same cloth as the rest of them, including the Republicans. What, he's slightly more liberal? I would argue he's still on the right wing of the country. He's a center-rightist. You know, they point to his health care plan. Oh, it's so liberal, his health care plan. That was Bob Dole's health care plan, a Republican. The same idea was proposed by the American Enterprise Institute, a right-wing think tank. Mitt Romney's health care plan is basically what Obama enacted at the federal level. Mitt Romney's a Republican. There is absolute. The guy has kill lists. The guy has kill lists. He's still engaging in the war in Afghanistan, and he kept us in Iraq for way longer than we should have been there anyway. Right? I mean, he's a Republican. He's a center-rightist. But these guys, he's so liberal. He's so scary. You know, he's so radical that I'm thinking civil war. We have to take the country back. But at least he has the backing of the sheriff. You know, that sheriff's going to make the difference, let me tell you. The U.S. military, we may have all these nukes and all these F-22 bombers and all these tanks, but he's got the sheriff, so we might have to rethink. And these people remember when Bush was president? What did they all say, right? You know, Bill Maher would get on and call him, Bush is an idiot, right? And by the way, how much evidence was there that Bush was an idiot? Only all the evidence in the world. Oh, how dare you, just so unpatriotic, get out of America. Right, and then here's a guy actually calling for secession and civil war against the president of the United States of America. And nobody says, don't talk about it. He's a Republican. It's okay. Same people. Same people, man, that said, how dare Bill Maher call President Bush an idiot? That's unpatriotic. Some guy threatened civil war. They don't say anything. So, listen, this guy's not questionable intelligence.
State of the Union, or state, my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it. speaks to me. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. And America needs a military where our best and brightest are proud to serve and proud to stay. If you're a single mother with two children, which is the toughest job in America as far as I'm concerned, and you're working hard to put food on your family, rarely is the question asked, is our children learning?
Too many good docs are getting out of business. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across the country. See, I don't think you can be.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Oh, my God. That guy was president for 8 years, man. That guy was president for 8 years, and the Republicans defended him vigorously, man. And unpatriotic if you call him unintelligent, when he's clearly unintelligent. Civil war, a guy's calling against Obama. Nobody says anything. Man, the hypocrisy and the double standards, it's just, it's unbelievable. All right, let's calm down here, move forward onto something. Oh... Like I always say, there's two factions of the modern-day Republican Party. You have your flat-out corporatists who, that's like the business faction of the Republican Party that are just the Reaganites. Just give all the money to the 1%, give us all the money in the world, and then maybe eventually at some point later down the road, it might just drip a little bit on your head and whatever, shut up, just deal with it, right? We just discussed the crazy wing. That's the other wing. The crazy wing is, civil war. We hate Obama. Right? But now let's just talk real fast about the business segment, because they're just as ridiculous in so many ways. Listen to this. Borrowing tactics from big tobacco indoor tanning industry is undermining doctors to argue that tanning is healthy. You don't say. In 2009, the World Health Organization reported that regular indoor tanning before age 30 increases the risk of melanoma, one of the fastest-growing rates of cancer, by 75%. Facing criticism and increasing state restrictions on youth tanning, the $4.8 billion tanning industry is pursuing a misinformation strategy, like I just said, borrowed from the tobacco industry. Remember when they were trying to convince the American people that smoking was good for you when all of this evidence was piling up about how it causes cancer? I'll never forget. There's this great clip, at some time, I think it was like the 1980s or maybe late 1970s, where they show a clip of all sitting United States senators, and it's a committee, and somebody's asking them, so do you think cigarettes cause cancer, yes or no? Every single one of them down the line, they either say no, or one of them famously said, I'm not a doctor. Gee, I wonder why they were saying that. Because they were bought and paid for. The tobacco industry cut them checks to run their campaign, so they made sure to protect them at all costs, even in the face of overwhelming scientific evidence. I mean, nowadays, when you ask somebody, is smoking bad for you, if they say no, that's like if you ask somebody if 2 plus 2 equals 4, and they're like, yeah, no, I think it's 623. So listen to this. The International Smart Tan Network has created a training video for salons with instructions to undermine medical consensus. The report chronicles the tanning industry's campaign, which provides salon employees talking points that tanning is good for you. Quote, at the heart of the industry's message is the idea that tanning critics, such as dermatologists, sunscreen manufacturers, and even charities like the American Cancer Society, are part of a profit-driven industry. And it's a conspiracy against the tanning companies. These critics are described as a, quote, sun scare industry that aims to frighten the public into avoiding all exposure to UV light. The tanning industry blames this group for causing what it calls a deadly epidemic of vitamin D deficiency and tries to position itself as a more trustworthy source of information on tanning health effects. And the reason they're doing this is because more states are placing age restrictions on tanning salons. And now, as a result, the tanning industry is increasing lobbying, of course. That's always what the answer is. And, this tells me two things, reading this article. Solidifies two beliefs. One of them is the idea that, of course, we need to get the money out of politics. I know that sounds too idealistic and almost naive, right, because it's just so ingrained in the culture of American politics. But other countries have successfully done it to varying degrees, right? Clean elections is when taxpayer money funds campaigns and everybody gets the same amount of money, so you get the same amount of ad time. You actually have an election based on the ideas, not on who gets the most amount of money from their contributors. Right? So that's the first lesson this teaches us. Get money out of politics. The other thing it teaches us is just how important government is in a civilized society. I mean, imagine there was no government, and then you would have had no reason and no money to fund a study determining the health effects of indoor tanning. Right? It was because of government-funded studies that they found out the facts about indoor tanning, and we realized, hey, this is really bad for you and could cause skin cancer. And by the way, the Republicans, whenever they talk about an ideal free market society, that whole premise is based off there being a limitation of what they call externalities. Externalities are things that are like a gap of information. If there's a gap of information and the public doesn't know all the facts about a given product they're buying, then their perfect capitalist system can't function properly, and it's actually a bad system and a negative system. Well, this is a perfect example. They're just flat out would have been a disastrous externality, which is everybody getting cancer from tanning salons, if it wasn't for the government studies that funded it and we realized, well, you get cancer, and then the government had to get the word out. Yes, we've done the studies. This is not good for you. Right? And since the state of our politics in the U.S. has gone so awry and big business runs the show, only in such a backward, fundamentally flawed, systematically unstructured system can you possibly have the political climate where the tanning industry goes, no. We have contradicting information. That's what we have got to do. It says, no, tanning's actually good for you. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, it's going to be largely a successful campaign. It always is a successful campaign because the only thing that this junk science is supposed to do is just start a debate. And if it starts a debate, they have just flat out succeeded. Because if there is a debate going on, then it's much harder to get policy passed. Because even if there's 2 out of 100 scientists, 2% of scientists say, oh, yeah, no, tanning's good for you. Well, if you have some senators who are oratorically skilled enough to argue that point vigorously enough, well, then unfortunately you're probably not going to get policy passed. And we all know the Republicans are a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America, so they're going to vote wherever their money comes from. And if the tanning salon lobby is upping the amount of money they're giving to politicians, you bet your ass there's going to be no real good law to put age restrictions on tanning. I mean, they largely succeeded in the global warming debate, right? What legislation has been passed to curtail global warming? And it's because of the junk science that's been peddled for years by industry-funded studies that largely come to the conclusions that corporate America wants. By the way, read the book, The Republican War on Science. The guy's last name is Mooney. I'm not recalling his first name, but honestly, the guy's not the best writer in the world, but he just gives, in terms of like the raw data he gives you in the book, it just shows you how unbelievable it is that when in in 96 when Newt Gingrich and the contract with America came into the White House. I mean, it was just, it's basically like just the corporations and the CEOs marched in and started running the show. But hey, let's not hold our breaths in hopes that the politicians will pass a really good campaign finance reform bill, because number one, the Supreme Court just ruled that money is free speech, right? And number two, that's essentially like voting for them to take money out of their own pockets, because they get most of their money in over-the-table open bribes from corporate America.
Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Have a traffic tip? Call 212-377-7757. Let us know 24/7. I'm Alicia Cruz with Total Traffic on Z100.
Two nights, one stage. Radio's biggest stars on music's biggest weekend.
Okay, let's turn it all the way up.
The sold-out iHeartRadio Music Festival.
What's up, this is Ricky Iglesias.
Hey, Taylor Swift.
Salud, Chico.
Hey, this is Pink.
Hey, check it out, y'all. This is Usher.
One for Bonnie from the band, though, yeah?
This is Rihanna.
Linkin Park. Shakira. Bon Jovi. Swedish House Mafia. Lil Wayne. Brad Paisley. Deadmau5. Mary J. Blige. Green Day. Miranda Lambert. Calvin Harris. Jason Aldean. September 21st and 22nd. The MGM Grand Las Vegas. The biggest live music event in radio history. The sold-out iHeartRadio Music Festival.
How does it feel to be part of this?
Listen for the Cupid text to win an ultimate experience to both nights and grab the rest at iHeartRadio.com/Vegas. Check out the most technically advanced whole home HD DVR system, The Hopper, on Dish.com, or call 1-800-WATCH-TV.
Get caught up on your movies with Kindle Fire. You're too crazy to go to the theater? Well, with Kindle Fire, you can catch up on all the movies you wanted to see. The Kindle Fire also great for games, apps, and only from Amazon.com can you get a paid app free every day. It's the perfect present, and with the cloud storage for all your Amazon content, you don't have to worry about storage space at all. The Kindle Fire, easy to use, easy to afford. Check it out now, Amazon.com.
Incredible Dr. Pole premieres Saturday, August 25th at 10 on Nat Geo Wild.
Zero to a ton plus tax, tags, and MEVs. Manual transmission 42-1, 12,000 mile lease for qualified buyers, including security deposit. All incentives. See dealer for details. 0% APR may affect final offer. DCA number 1410295. FAC number 7042463.
It's here. It's happening. Employee pricing at Manfredi's. Get your Manfredi vehicle at the same discount our employees get. No negotiating. From now until the end of August, get the lowest possible discount on any car in the store just for walking in, just like you work here. Fiat summer clearance is now on, and for only $199 a month, you can lease a brand new 2012 Fiat 500 pop hatchback with zero joint signing and 0% APR financing for up to 60 months. Just sign and drive away today at Manfredi Fiat. Get your Manfredi employee pricing today on Highland Boulevard, Staten Island.
Now, you have no idea what's coming for you. The rush.
What did you do to me, man? What the hell am I carrying?
Can't be gentler. One time or another, we all get hit. Sometimes we gotta hit back. Premium Rush. Rated PG-13. Now play.
You're cruising down the highway and don't want to stop for gas. BP gasoline with Invigorate can help you keep on going, because it can help your car get a few more miles per tank compared to low detergent gas. When used continuously, it helps clean and protect critical engine parts from harmful deposits, so you can go a little farther between fill-ups. So blow by that exit. You've got driving to do. BP gasoline with Invigorate. Go a little farther.
Hey, it's Earl from the Walmart commercials. Leticia doesn't think she can get everything on her back-to-school list in one stop, so I called her.
Hello?
Hi, did you know that Walmart's got everything on your back-to-school list, including all the dinners you need to feed the troops after a long day at school?
How come I didn't know about this?
That's why I'm calling you. What's for dinner?
I was thinking spaghetti.
Ooh, spaghetti.
Yeah.
See for yourself. Get quick and easy dinners like Marie Callender's Family Size Steak, Chef Boyardee Ravioli, and Hamburger Helper, all backed by Walmart's low price guarantee. Our stores will match the price of any local.
All right, guys, we're back here on the Kyle Klinsky Show, Block Talk Radio. Not much time left, unfortunately. We will be back on Monday at 5 o'clock, same time. Just real quick before I go, though, I do want to mention Associated Press is reporting that a Reagan-appointed judge has claimed that the deregulation movement made a fundamental mistake. And that's only 1,000,000% right. It's one thing to be in favor of deregulation. It's a complete another thing to pretend like deregulation is good for the middle class. It's unquestionably not good for the middle class. It's only going to make most of the income generated go to the top 1% and, in essence, screw over everybody else. If you want to help people, create a societal safety net. Take things off the table like health care and college, among other things. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for listening. See you guys on Monday.
Amstel Light Lager Beer, Amstel USA, White Plains, New York.
Modell Sporting Goods is the destination for all your back-to-school needs. Men's Adidas logo or Nike graphic or swoosh tees, your choice, $12. Take advantage of the special purchase of men's polos, 4 for $20, limit 8. Plus soccer packages from Nike and Adidas for just $35 each. Save up to $15 on footwear for the entire family from brands like Nike, Adidas, Asics, and much more. Check out our circular in-stores now for even more deals. When you've got to save for back-to-school, you've got to go to Modell.
Hey, what's up? It's Mo, and let me tell you all about the Paul Miller Honda Summer Clearance Event that's going on right now.